by my side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Ray Garino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! With mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disasters as they shake hands from the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Feed, Ray Garino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway side. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass.
We have got rats in the cellar. We've got news up the fella. We got things out the gazella on Motormouth Radio.
And it ain't just plain vanilla.
And not vanilla at all. With your host, Ray Guarino.
Actually, we are two kind of vanilla guys, huh?
A little bit. You're right. We're a little...
I feel a little pistachio green today. But.
Sometimes, yes. Ray Guarino with his co-host, wingman, ex-O-Manticon, Joe D. Sitting
yeah, that
next
other guy.
To me. And we're pulling it together on Long Island for you again with another rousing hour of radio. You can follow us on MotormouthRadio.com. You can get us follow us on Twitter at Motormouth Radio or Joe's favorite Instagram.
Real_ Motormouth Radio.
And you can follow our exploits on there because we do post the things we get into, like what just some of the things that recently got into.
You've been exploiting.
I do recommend if you want to see what goes on with the show or what we do outside the show, follow us on those platforms. And we're also on Facebook, Motormouth Radio.
Yes.
Because you'll see what goes on when we're not in the studio.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk to us in the studio...
They actually let us out.
Yeah, they do sometimes. If you want to talk to us, you can. We're still using our altered phone number, which is 516-572-0606. They haven't fixed the phone lines yet, so at least we have something we can use. And we will have a guest today. We're going to be talking to Mr. Matt Avery, who wrote a great book about Copo Camaros, Chevelles, and Novas, with a little bit of Corvair and Vega thrown in there, Joe, because a lot of people don't realize they were done too.
Well, Copo is an option code, you know.
Central Office Production Order. Yeah, absolutely. So that's been part of our world for a long time. But we'll get into that with Matt after our first break. I want to tell you, I almost had a break. One of the things you might want to see on Instagram, if you want to check it out, is I'll just put this out. If you have any kind of a Asian vehicle with a V6 in it, like a Maxima, we'll use that for an example.
Which hour they do this, Maxima?
And you might want to have to change your AC compressor. Yeah. Don't do it!
Yeah.
Run!
Don't try this at home, folks.
Yeah, don't try it at home, because that was the job that I had to do in the shop. And let me tell you something. When I say the whole front of that car had to come off just to get an AC compressor.
Yeah.
I remember the days, Joe, AC compressors were on the top of the engine, on the right or the left, depending on what
GM... Yeah, because they kind of hung them on there, you know what I mean? It was like, oh, it's an option. Oh, this guy wants AC. Here, give me a couple brackets. Give me an extra belt. Zang.
And if you had a Chrysler, it was dead center. It was like,
right,
bang.
It was like another little engine, that thing.
Well, I really think it's like they built the car around this thing.
Sometimes it feels that way. Certain components like a heater core, AC compressor, because they figure, you're never going to need this. Why do you have to touch this for? You need one of these? You buy a new car.
Right?
You buy a new car.
And I tell you, the big component, the compressor itself wasn't the biggest problem to physically get out. It was all the little pieces, like the little 10-millimeter screws that hold the AC line onto the compressor.
Yeah.
Even from the top, you get in with a real long long extension and a swivel, but how can I put this? The interplay between the socket on the screw and the actual metal tube,
yeah.
You didn't have enough room. You needed like a super thin socket.
Oh, yeah. So, in other words, like I told you, they were drinking in the same bar as the Germans.
They were drinking in the same bar as the Tool guys, I think. Yeah. They were saying, ah, we can make tools for that. What a disaster. So,
you see, Ray, but you're good about it because some of us would have just pounded the thing on.
Well, you know, the thing that would have been
Give me that air chisel.
The thing that would have been easy would have been to cut a section of the engine cradle out. That would have given me total access and then just weld it back in.
Yeah.
I didn't have a welder at the shop, so I couldn't. Luckily, you know, Mike was there, and he got to see this firsthand. So he's like, is this really what you got to do this?
So it's not like you was drinking coffee, watching YouTube, and hanging out there. You were actually working.
And the good thing is, too, him with his vast body experience, he said, you know, I think we got to take the bumper off and the lights. And I was like, well, that's what you guys do.
Yeah, I think when I looked it up in all day, it was like remove radiator, which is, then it was like, because when you go to remove, this is always the fun part. They say, remove radiator. Okay. And then you got to remove radiator. You know, then I've learned it's like you got to radiator, and it's like remove front bumper.
Right.
All right. And then remove front bumper. Remove hood.
Yeah, right.
Remove car from inventory.
Exactly.
Yeah, so basically, you know, those things always kind of sneak up on you, but it's pretty nasty. And what happened to that thing? What, the clutch went bad? It got physically damaged?
I mean, you know, and you can see once I got it out and I spun it, you spun the pulley, it's like growling like crazy.
So, oh, yeah, okay.
That was the problem.
So you sent it to the North Shore Animal Shelter there?
Yeah. We'll send that one out and I got a new one to go in there. But that was the thing to get the condenser and radiator freed. In front of that, now we're working backwards, in front of that is this big inner bumper. That's the actual support that saves the front of the car in an accident.
Yeah.
With its foam backing. And then in front of that is the actual bumper cover. So,
nothing's easy. Nothing's four bolts. Four bolts and a pry bar.
Well, that's it. The bodywork side of it isn't my forte. That's not what I do. I like to see these guys. I watch the other bike do that all the time, and I try to study what he does. But and I remembered, I said, wow, there's usually some crazy screws through the wheel well. You know, there's always something through the wheel. Actually, the tool guys, I saw it on Hey Matco Man, on Brian's site.
Right.
Not his site. But on the Matco site, he has a set of these super deep sockets. It's like, I think, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I mean, like 4-inch sockets.
Yeah.
And they have a graphic. They said, you know, you put a deep socket on this. No, it ain't going to work. You need one of these because you got to go in through the fender, the inside of the fender.
Right.
Who the heck designed that fastener, I want to know.
You know? Somebody who doesn't have to do it every day.
Emperor Hirohito's great-grandnephew,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the kind of thing, you know, when they write the labor times on these things, too, it's like they've already come up with the special tool. They have it all laying down, you know, laying on the bench for the mechanic who's going to do it, who's also kind of like watched, you know, talked to the engineers and figured all that. It's also a brandy spanking new clean car.
Right.
And there's no fat woman yelling, where's my car?
Yeah.
Behind them. So
that's the thing. You could see how the engine and all its components would be assembled on a subframe and then put up into that body.
Yeah,
and
pretty much.
Never serviced in that condition.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of obvious. And, man, what a pain. But I did, you know, I was talking to Mike. He had to leave. He had to go do some stuff. He said, so what are you going to do? And I said, I'll come back tomorrow if I have to finish up, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but then I said, you know what? But in my head, even though I'm starting to drag a little, is to grind it out. The more I can get done today, the less I can get done, I have to do tomorrow.
Exactly.
And I did stay and I did get it back together. I did finish it up, everything I could do. I left it where it's, the body guy can now come in and just put his panels in and be done with it.
Excellent. Yeah, that's the right way to do it because I don't want to leave anything for the next guy. That's
Not even that. Even if I had to go back today, sometimes going back, I did that. I did that with the Mercedes. I did that with the Honda, with the suspension. Sometimes going back the second day, you kind of reset your clock, you're fresh.
It depends because sometimes, it's, you know, like you forget where stuff goes. You know, you have like that little mental.
Right.
But I'm personally like grind it out.
Yeah.
Unless it's a diagnostic thing, which then you sort of walk away from it and you say, like, wait a second. we kind of just had one of those little moments in the parking lot a few minutes ago.
We did because we're looking at the crew. cruise in my fleet, the one I just put the throttle body in, which is now... I told my wife, I used the diagnostic term today. I said, yeah, it's running like... When I came in from the house, I scanned. I said, yeah, it's running like a bag of turds. And she said, what? Like, it's a diagnostic term. I said, look it up. You'll...
a container of Derritus there. But that was the thing. I was like, this thing's got no airflow. Remember remember the other night at the all-staff meeting? You showed me the freeze frame there, and I was like, wow, this thing's got no airflow.
But that was caveman freeze frame, because it was the freeze frame that I hand-scribed onto a pad.
Yeah, but your hand-scribed stuff is better than some of the stuff that I see on these cheapo tools and whatnot. But what did I say? I picked up, wait a minute, this car's only got like 1 gram per second, you know, not even a gram per second.
A one thimble per tonnage.
Yeah, right. And of course, because at least yours put it in pounds per hour instead of bushels per season or something.
Yeah, that's my Innova scanner.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, short and long fuel trims were both in the 30s, 34 and 35 respectively.
Which is crazy, which we were talking about last week with that Mustang there.
Right, right.
You know, the rule of thumb is 10, maybe if you're having a good day, 15%.
Right.
All right? And certain cars, Jap cars especially, and European cars,
right,
that number's normally no more than 5.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So right there, you know, this thing is like screaming for mercy.
Right.
So no wonder you got lean codes.
So now you started doing some diagnostics, looking on in the computer, and you're coming up with a valve cover thing, which
when we came inside, because I was like, okay, it's time to get ready for the show, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, since I just kind of took a walk down the hallway there, mm-hmm, and I kind of reset.
Right,
and
to I was reset
like,
room.
I kind of sort of remember, I'm like, okay. Bad set? No. Wait a minute. Is that the one with the friggin' PCV system?
Uh-huh.
Because some of the later model GMs, the four cylinders, this is not, by the way, peculiar to the Cruze. There's other versions of it in, we had one in an Equinox.
Okay.
Not that long ago. What they do is it's not a valve sticking out of the valve cover anymore.
Right.
In the traditional sense. Now it's a calibrated orifice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which, if something somehow is not calibrated no more, well, then that's the end of that discussion. So when we go outside, I found the PI, or the PIP, which is the preliminary information put out there, mm-hmm, that GM has. And they tell you, go find this little cap in the valve cover and stick your finger over it and see if the car snaps out of it. Which I remember reading this. I never had to do one of these.
Right.
But it was like rolling around in the back of my head. So,
well, that'll certainly be an easy fix.
Yeah, well, that's definitely like Hail Mary when we do it, you know. But we'll see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, especially the problem is more than idle, which, as we discussed, lean is either not enough fuel or too much air. And then an idle, too much air is almost always the, you know, just traditionally.
Right.
That's where you're headed, you know?
Right, exactly.
So we'll see, because I was just doing a little poking around there. GM wants you to do the valve cover.
Yeah, of course.
All right, and there are certain aftermarket companies that make, you know, one of their little trouble saver thingy bobbies.
Yeah,
there.
Right. That's true. The problem solver line. I think the Asian arm of GM wants you to change the AC compressor. But I'll tell you something. I'm looking at that Cruze and saying, wow, this car is so much easier to work on than that Maxima. And I was like, what? You know, you get to have a respect for different car lines when you see how they are for repairability. And even the Traverse, I did an oil change on the Traverse the other day, and that thing was like easy to work on compared to some of the other SUV type vehicles I've seen.
Absolutely. No, well, I mean, some car companies are better about it than others.
Yeah.
They just put things in ungodly spots because, you know, the guys who designed them are like, hey, we ain't got to do this. That poor grease monkey, you know, he'll just have to get by. Or their other attitude as well, you know, seeing, especially with things like oil changes, is that, you know, now you do them every, like, you know, 20,000 miles or some, you know, insane number like that. So, like, maybe in the course of the car's warranty period, you know, it might only have to be done once or twice.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little later on. We're going to talk about that. I want to talk about oil filters and things like that.
Right.
We're going to take our first break, and then we'll come back and hopefully speak with Matt Avery. Don't call us right now, but later, the number will be 516-572-0606. And for now, we're going to go out and, you know, like, I'm hoping, like, there'll be a little lick and a promise to fix this car. So on 90.3 WHBC.
I ain't looking nothing. You licking.
90.3 WHBC. We'll be back.
Portion of programming on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by the Center for Workforce Development and Lifelong Learning at Nassau Community College, which is offering an introduction to radio broadcasting course for high school students interested in a media career. You can have the opportunity to learn hands-on in WHPC's studios, learning all about what the exciting world of radio has to offer. Students should have basic computer knowledge. More information can be found by calling 516-572-7472 or visit ncc.edu/continuing education.
This program is brought to you by Miller's Ale House, located at 3046 Hempstead Turnpike, across from the Tri-County Flea Market in Levittown. Open for lunch, dinner, and late night, featuring a full bar 7 days a week, where you can watch all your favorite teams while eating their zingers, wings, a cheeseburger, and more. More information is available at millersalehouse.com or by calling the Levittown location at 516-520-7000. Miller's Ale House of Levittown is a proud supporter of the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
This is the Nassau Morning Madhouse.
To me, that's so cool because when you see pigeons in New York, they're kind of like the people. Like, they look like they're on a mission. They're in a rush.
They're in a hat and suit, carrying a briefcase, gotta go to work.
This week is brought to you by the Turnt Association, providing you proper ways on how to get turnt and unturnt.
See, I love this. You want to know what's funny about that? Is it's only making you guys laugh, not everybody else. So obviously you're doing something wrong.
What are you talking about?
The voice of Nassau Community College.
90.3 WHPC.
This is Dennis Pitzenberger from Sticker Shock, and if you're not listening to Motormouth Radio, boy, you are lost in the smoke of the burnout. Make sure and tune in each and every week because these guys are exactly what you want to hear. Real car guys, real talk every single weekend.
All right, we're looking, as we promised, here on Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive radio talk show. Ray Guarino, Joe D.
Yeah, the other guy.
And we are waiting. We just heard from Matt Avery offline. We're waiting to hear him. Their phone should click in a second, and we will be back. There I am ejecting my music, which I should be doing. We're going to talk about...
What did I tell you about ejecting in the middle of a show?
I know.
Now I got to go get the mop. Okay?
Let's try this. We'll say, hi, you're on with the Motormouths.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Matt. Morning. How you doing? We've got Ray Guarino and Joe D.
Hey, Matt.
Today.
What's going on, man?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Excellent.
Hanging in there. Good to hear from you.
So,
good.
Matt, you wrote a book, something that's, you know, Joe and I are both Chevy guys, like, forever. So, you wrote a book about Copo, Camaros, Chevelles, and Novas, and Corvairs in Vegas, too, which is
right.
Really cool. And that's what we're going to talk about. I got to tell you a little funny story. Years ago, before I was on this show, and I've been on this show since 2004, I was walking around a car show, and I had been a listener of the show. So I had called in just to give a report from the car show, and the two hosts at the time were debating the term Copo came up. They said, oh, Ray will know. Hey, what does Copo mean? And they had like a little, it was Chris and Mikey T. And I said, Central Office Production Order. I'm like, I know. So, you know, just one of those things that not everybody knows, but, you know, something that I read early and stuck in my head. It was like ingrained.
Well, yeah, of course, you know, especially when you're dealing with the cars that they're attached to,
exactly.
As a rule.
So, Matt.
Yeah,
talk to us.
Well, Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say, you know, the fascinating thing, guys, too, is that for such legendary cars, you know, there is a lot of mystique about them. And so that was one of the neat things as a journalist is to bring to light some of those things that people really haven't really been aware of or known about for the longest time. I mean, including the story of the Corvair and Vega being, in my opinion, as equally important as the L72-69, you know, Yanko Camaros that everyone knows and loves. So it was really cool to be able to do that. So,
yeah. So what was the impetus for, like for writing the book? Was it something that was near and dear to your heart? Are you a Chevy guy in the dyed-in-the-wool like we are, GM guys? Or was it just a project that you got into?
Kind of the latter, you know. It was kind of a project I got into. So I've been writing a column here for the Chicago Daily Herald called Classic Recollections every weekend, and I kind of showcase Chicago suburban car owners and their stories. And so I kind of kept seeing a trend, you know, maybe a couple times a year I'd see these cars and be able to experience them. And then when CarTech Auto Books and Manuals approached me a couple years ago about this project and kind of put the idea together, it just seemed like a really good match, just because currently there's not a lot of data out there on these cars. So it was really neat to be able to bring kind of the first book of this caliber to market. Really exciting. So.
Sure. How did you find, how was it doing research on that? Was it challenging or was it very easy?
it was a little daunting. It was a little daunting, as it sounds like you guys are well aware of. You know, there's not a lot of press material from back in the day that was created for these cars. You know, there's no advertising, there's no historical photography captured by General Motors, and that was confirmed because I did work closely with the GM Heritage Center, and they kind of said the same thing. You know, like, I keep emailing them like, hey, you know, do you guys have any data on these cars? And it was kind of funny because I got the impression they're like, no, Matt, we still don't have any data on these cars.
Yeah, what cars?
They really,
ignore that really nasty sounding Camaro in the corner.
Well, that's the thing. The whole project, I mean, for people who didn't know, it was kind of like a Skunk Works or a backdoor way to order the car that you wanted if you were so inclined.
Well, there were other vehicles that were Copos too, but there were things like taxi cabs and cop cars and stuff like that.
Right.
Which is what the system was meant to do. And then somebody said, let's get these under the radar this way. Am I right?
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. So, it's kind of funny because I still come across enthusiasts that whenever, you know, we're talking about Copos, they'll always rib me and say, oh, you know that there was Copo pickup trucks and so, or, you know, taxi cabs. But like you said, exactly. My project, the book here focuses exclusively on the models that were modified through the central office for a performance application. That's kind of how I differentiate this piece from there's no chapter on a 1955 to 1957 Chevrolet taxi cab modified for Copo, because that was more of an industrial commercial part. But yeah, exactly. The reason why Chevrolet needed something like this backdoor program, like was said earlier, a Skunk Works, if you will, is that during the 1950s and 60s, as you guys are probably well aware of, racing is becoming more and more dangerous. Government starts to kind of think, hey, you know, maybe we should kind of step in and moderate some of the stuff. So all the automakers panic. They start kind of pulling back from racing in the late 50s. And then in the early 60s, Ford and Chrysler are like, screw it. No one's really, you know, we're just going back into racing. We're going to take a chance. Chevrolet can't do that. They're so much larger than those other competitors.
Right.
So they kind of are still trying to toe that line of, being a respectable, brand and avoiding government, intervention and being broken up as monopoly. So they can't build the biggest, baddest cars that they want to. And so finally in 1965, Don Yanko out of Canonsburg, Pennsylvania with his Chevrolet dealership, he's kind of the one that opens up the floodgate. There's no exact, I can't pinpoint exactly when, but he was big into racing and he connected with Vince Piggins at General Motors, and that's kind of how what opened up the door for the Copo Corvair. And no, it wasn't an L72 427. it had some that would be really cool, yeah. But you know, a lot of people think that too, Copo only 427. So but yeah, he built 100 of those little things, and at the end of 1965 for the 1966 race season, and they're identified by being all white with blue stripes, and then that kind of opens up the doors for what would come in a couple years later with the Camaros and also the Novas.
Matt, did you find stats on what the, because people always want to know, I don't particularly care, but like what the rarest one was, what the lowest production number of the model cars were?
Sure. Yeah. No, and I get that question a lot. It's hard to pinpoint that. So, I mean, in terms of production, total vehicle production is probably less than, you know, maybe 1,000 or 2 models in general. But in terms of like the rarest, everyone loves the 69 Z01. You know, those always are crossing the auction block and bringing lots of money. People like those. But some of the lesser known ones in particular, though, and I was able to see it and photograph in the book. There was a 1969 Copo Corvair. It was a one of one. It was built for tire testing, but readers can see that. So, I mean, so it's kind of one of those things where it depends on what you're into, but they're all, in my opinion, they're obviously all rare. You know, you won't really come across them. The other ones too that I would say are kind of like finding a needle in a haystack are the 1970 and a half Copo Camaros, but with the high back spoiler. So that's a really seldom known slice of this story that a lot of people are unaware of. But man, it took me, it was right up until the last minute to get a car that had the paperwork documenting it as having that high back spoiler, because a lot of them just weren't preserved. So.
Right. Yeah, and as we know,
Those things were chopped up pretty good, yeah.
Joe and I are both second-gen Camaro freaks. We both owned them and wish we had them back. So
yes.
We know that in 70, the car had low back seats and then had that little short spoiler.
The short spoiler.
Now, my 71, of course, had the taller spoiler, like that was taken really from the Trans Am.
Yes.
That's where they got it.
They came up with the 2 end caps and the center section was Firebird.
Outside of your research, and you know, there's, if you don't know this, I don't know if I'm going to hold you about it. Did other manufacturers have the same kind of programs in place, like Ford and Chrysler and Mercury and whatever?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And from my research, there's really nothing that indicates that because, like I said earlier, those other competitors really didn't have to skirt some of this pressure that Chevrolet was feeling. So obviously Ford found a great partner with Shelby, and they were able to kind of do things a little bit more up front. Chevrolet had to do more backdoor programs. You know, they really had to distance themselves from any kind of racing initiatives. You know, they pulled out a sponsorship of racing just to really try to show those government officials who are eager to come in and kind of clean house, that, hey, you know, we're a respectable company. We're not building anything. And, you know, the other thing too that was apparent through my research is that, because I always wondered, well, then how come the Corvette was, you know, kind of touted? And, you know, it really seems that drag racing was kind of the sport of hooligans versus, you know, like a Corvette was more of a gentleman's, you know, so that's why there's no really Corpo Corvettes or anything, because Chevrolet was able to kind of, that was in a different league of its own. But when it came to, you know, being the biggest, baddest car in the drag strip, you know, it was easy to do, but it had a negative image associated with it for sure.
Right. You know, our good friend Cliff, a car aficionado in his own right, want to know if there were any crazy Copos built like four-door cars, or, you know, the Biscaynes or wagons or anything like that you're aware
sure.
of.
Sure. I'll take that from a performance angle. Not that I have come across. So some of the, like I know in terms of four-door Copos, I came across some paperwork in the late 50s. There was a Chevy wagon that a forest preserve somewhere, I think out west, wanted to use for some of their park rangers. And so they put a Copo in.
Nice.
And, it, you know, instead of having the windows in the back, it was kind of a panel delivery type thing. But so other than that, I don't really come across the four doors too often.
Yeah.
The other thing that probably a lot of listeners have heard of is, like, I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine just this week about the 1970 Copo Chevelle with an LS6, and a lot of people always ask, you know, hey, was that put in through the central office? And the thing about that is that Copo could also be used for paint swapping, you know.
Right.
So that was very, very common. So that's where, if you do come across a car like that or something, always check the fine print on the stanchion or the board or whatever, if it says something Copo, because more than likely it's just because of a paint swap.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. It was meant for the stuff that you couldn't check off in the order form at the dealer. You know, it was an oddball thing of one for one reason or another. You know, hopefully it was some cool performance thing, but not necessarily.
And the thing is, Joe was a Chevy dealer guy. He worked for the dealership, so he's kind of seen, I'm sure shades this stuff.
Yeah, there's all kinds of shenanigans going on with that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
exactly. I mean, as you and a lot of the listeners know, Chevrolet used that RPO structure when you would go in to request a new vehicle, right? You know, the regular production option, were groups of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So a central office production order was just a modification on that, saying, hey, this needs to be flagged as something that has not already been greenlit for production.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. Matt, can we...
It's kind of like having your mayo on the side.
Yeah, right, like asking for the stuff on the side. Yeah, extra dressing in the thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Matt,
can we keep you on the side for a minute while we take our next break, and then we'll
absolutely
come back, and we'll gladly pick up where we left this off. We'll chip away the stone a little bit more at this Copo stuff. So, Matt Avery, please hang with us. We'll be back in a minute on Motormouth Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
This show is brought to you by the Paramount in Huntington, who presents Classic Albums Live, The Beatles, Abbey Road 50th Anniversary on Saturday, April 6th at 8 p.m. More information can be found online at ParamountNY.com.
Oh my, oh my, oh my. Let me tell you about this fine show we have here at the station called Motormouth Radio. It is a car show hosted by Ray Guarino and Joe D. But you know what? It's not just cars. We sometimes talk about other things, and even when they're just talking about cars, it's about the love of cars. It's about the feeling you get. You know, they open up a hood and they say, damn, I want to redo this engine. Not everyone says that. These guys do. And like I always say also, you know, you watch those cooking shows. You don't cook. You can listen to these guys not know anything about a car. So please listen to Motormouth Radio every Sunday, 12 noon, right here on WHPC. And if you don't listen, that's your fault. You'll go through the rest of the day saying, damn it, I didn't listen. I should have listened. Sort of like Motormouth Radio. You don't have to like cars to listen to them. It helps if you do. But you don't have to. Thank you.
Yeah, we're chipping away at that stone right now here on Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Joe D. We have Matt Avery on the line, the author of the Copo. Matt, what is the full title of that book?
The full title is Copo, Camaro, Chevelle, and Nova. But I like to call it Copo for short.
Got it. And I just want to make a note that there are listeners trying to call our regular studio line, which is right now out of service, so do not call that number. Once we are once we're done with speaking with Matt, you can get us at 516-572-0606, and we'll be happy to take those calls and talk with you. And we're working on this new multi-line deal, so hopefully in the near future we'll be able to have listeners call and talk to the guests, which is something that'll be a new thing for us. It's going to be interesting, I'll tell you that much. Because Matt, the listeners, some of who are our friends, man.
Yeah, the comments are coming in. Yeah,
I don't know how many different places you've hung out with how many different types of people, but ours are kind of unique.
Is that the word you're using this week, huh?
Yeah. So Matt, let me ask you, what's, the Copo stuff is fantastic. We all love that history. What's in your car history? Anything that you particularly have owned and loved and have now and love or aspire to have and love?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've like a lot of you listeners and a lot of you guys, I'm a longtime car guy. I had a couple Mustangs at one point. And then I got into European stuff. I was a technician for a number of years at a dealership in Annapolis for Mercedes-Benz and also BMW. So yeah, got into some of the German stuff, M3s and that kind of stuff. And now I'm back to kind of the quirky. I have a Honda Civic SI, but the EP3 body style that was brought over from Europe. cool. during the early 2000s. So,
oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Nice. That's, hey, that is, that's cool. Yeah.
You ain't seen one of them on yeah, every corner.
No, and then the classic that I'm pursuing is another off the wall. I'm looking for a late 1960s Volkswagen Squareback.
Type 3, right? Or is that a
Type 3 Squareback?
Yeah, okay.
With the fuel injection, right?
Which the K, K or L Jetronic in that car? Which one would
it's
that
probably
be?
K.
Yeah, K.
Right?
I think, yeah, but just the cutest little wagon, and I'd love to get my hands on one of those. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, yeah. You know what? And you, as you very well know, the VW culture in this country is like booming, man. I mean, these guys are slamming, bagging, dropping, and really customizing VWs to make them look as cool as I never even thought in a drunken haze that they could have been.
Yeah, that's almost oxymoronic, but it works somehow. It works.
It does.
You know?
Yeah.
VWs goes cool. to show you.
No, that's pretty cool, Matt. Now, of course, like us, you're saddled with bad weather in the winter. You don't have 12-month seasonal driving, but...
What plan? You know, 12 season? What plan are you on?
12 months.
Oh, okay.
Per season, I should say.
I was going to say, you know, you didn't show me your passport, the interplanetary passport there.
I thought that was okay. Assumed. Yeah. That's cool. So, are those, does that reflect kind of the flavor of the circles that you run in these days, Matt, with your friends and whatnot? Are they kind of aligned with you on those cars?
You mean from a, like in the hobby or from my peers or,
your peer group, yeah, your buddies.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would say so, but I mean, I think also the thing that's evident to me is that, you know, there is still a very growing love for the automobile. You know, it's funny, I feel like for every article that comes out about how kids today would rather, you know, have a phone than a car, it's kind of like one of those things where when I'm out at a cruise night or a car show, I see the up-and-coming generation that knows and loves these cars. So, you know, I think it's kind of exciting. I don't think it's as simple as saying, well, you know, no one, you know, under 30 cares about cars anymore just because it's not true, because I see it out there, and I'm sure you guys do. And to me, I think we have another wonderful season ahead for the next, you know, for many more years of automotive culture. And yeah, it might be different. You know, you might have a modified Chevy Volt parked next to, you know, maybe a Buick GNX or something, but you got to appreciate that that's car culture. You know, right. It can't all be Tri-5 Chevys and stuff, you know, and no one else.
You look back through history, and, you know, we use ourselves as a gauge, but of course you can look at other people the same way, and you see what's been popular and what's not. Oh, we have this conversation all the time, and yeah, to see a Volt one of these days, this one has more sparks per second than it came through. Well, then there's a spark, too. You could even
transfer a second. Spark EV.
Yeah. And yeah, it's kind of cool that the car culture keeps reviving itself with stuff. But, you know, one of the arguments, not arguments, one of the conversations we have all the time is, and I just had it the other day with somebody, are the current crop, the newer cars from the late 90s through the 2000s, are they going to be, I was just talking to Dan Short from Phantom Works about this the other day.
Yeah.
Are they going to be restorable? Will you be able to because of the electronics? And we don't know yet.
Yeah, that's going to end up being tough because they're not hanging on to parts like they used to.
Right.
Yeah, that's a biggie.
I mean, I would say on a related note, I mean, is there demand? I'd say for sure. I know that I was surprised, but I saw it coming. It was a couple months ago at one of the Barrett Jackson auctions, Acura Integra won the first, one of the early 90s, the Type R, I think, but crossed the block. And I think we're just going to see more of that. You know, the Fox body Mustangs, you know, are going to be coming hot and for sure stuff through the 90s. So to your point, will it be restorable with all the electronics? Not sure, but there's definitely going to be demand.
I know like that Type 3 you're talking about and the M3, you know, I have a 79 Fiat Spider, and I could rebuild that car, and I have rebuilt most of it out of catalogs.
Yes, you know, have.
I'm getting front end parts, and they're coming from bags marked with Italian writing on them. I mean, they're right from me. There's so much of a glut of parts for those cars.
Right.
So stuff like that, yeah, we can still see that, you know, 30 years later, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know.
It will. But you know, the thing that's been really rewarding is with this particular project is just to see so much love and passion for the Copo cars. Just since the book has come out in September, I've just been, it's been overwhelming to see people coming out of the woodwork telling their story. So it's been neat to also shed light on that and get people thinking about those cars too. So, and as a journalist and researcher, it's always cool to have that. You know, that's the fruit of your labors to see a renewed passion for that. So, so it's neat to always do that.
Absolutely. How long did it did you research this the topics for this book?
Yeah, it was just shy of 2 years.
Wow.
And that one of the things that I wanted to do when I signed on to the project was, you know, looking at the vehicles and recognizing them as world class, you know, Chevrolet cars. I wanted to bring a world class experience to the reader. So to that end, all the photography I did myself, it's all original. It has not been published anywhere else. And I wanted to be on site experiencing every single car that I was going to talk about and research. So to that end, over 45 of the world's best Copo cars I documented and experienced for the book, and that took me around the country, over 14 states, and up into Canada. So it was a whirlwind 2 years. I have a very patient and supportive wife who was behind me all the way, but yeah, it was a whirlwind. So
that's great. Yeah, I know that. I know these projects typically take a lot longer than expected, and then once you get in it, you know, I dabble with some amateur writing myself, and when you get into something, you always hit that point of like, why am I doing this? Why did I say yes? Because and you're like past, you're committed now. You got to do it, and you're like, oh my god, what am I going to do? But then you always find a way that renewed energy where you just get you. It's like I look at dolphins. I think of like dolphins in an ocean. They come up, they're like, get me out of here, get me out of here, and they just dive right back down again, and then happy.
Yeah. And, you know, I certainly would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge, you know, I had so many wonderful friends and technical advisors and experts that I leaned on heavily right here in the Chicago suburbs. Ed Kanin, one of the the tip of the spear who started many years ago documenting these cars. He was a big help. Brian Henderson of the Supercar Workshop down in Pennsylvania. Joe Barr, another world-class Yanko historian. And many more that really helped to contribute to make the project what it is. So
that's excellent. And I know there's a website, copothebook.com.
I'm on it right now. Good-looking website, good-looking book.
I'm going to get in touch with Kartek because actually this was kind of interesting, Joe. You know, Matt reached out to me about the interview, which usually it's the other way around. And I look back, I had never gotten a copy of the book, which I requested. So it kind of fell through the cracks for me with all the other
perhaps
stuff.
Perhaps it's selling like hotcakes and they figure, you don't need one.
Hey, I'm going to get one now. That's for darn sure. I'm going to get in touch with Kartek this week.
This looks great. I mean, I was tapping through the website while we were talking here. It's pretty impressive shots there.
Well, I got to say, that is one thing I like about Kartek is they will embrace titles like this and get involved, you know, as well as Motorbooks, another great company that does that. You know, they really will go outside the box.
We are very fortunate to be having interaction with folks like that.
Yeah, and the book is available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, but if listeners purchase it through copothebook.com, that will come with an autograph from myself as I mail those out. So if people are interested, that's the way to do it. So.
Not bad,
Very good. Matt, just before we go, tell us a little bit about Copo Vegas, because we're kind of closet Vega fans around here.
Okay. Sure. So Copo Vegas. So basically what happens is as the 1970s kind of kick off, you know, the fuel crisis and stuff is starting to come into full swing. And, you know, the big block, high powered muscle cars are starting to kind of go out of vogue. So Don Yanko kind of is thinking, you know, what's the next up and coming sports car I can create? So he jumps onto the Vega. And originally his plan was to do what he had been doing with like the 69 L72, 427 Camaros, which was he wanted the Vega to be turbocharged, which, Chevrolet had started to look into, but was not going to fully move forward. So he wanted to do it, but then he wanted Chevrolet to install the turbochargers on, send the cars to him for him to sell. Chevrolet wasn't able to do that. And then Don tried to push forward with it himself. And when that happened, the EPA stepped in and had updated some of their mandates about automobile production. And they were going to say, if you're going to do that, you're now going to be labeled as a vehicle manufacturer. He had to do a lot of tests, you know, as the manufacturers would, and it became too costly. So he did throttle back in terms of having all the parts put on the Vega that he wanted, and it kind of became more or less kind of an over-the-counter. So turbocharger kits were sold through a parts catalog, there was 200 in 1971 and 200 in 1972 Yanko Vegas that have the stripes and crest and did have some some copa modifications done to it from the factory, just not everything that Don wanted. And, you know, today, those are some of, you talked about rare cars earlier, but from my research, there's less than 10 left known cars in the world of those 400, so they went fast and haven't really come back. So
right, wow, that's cool. Yeah, that's a nice little sidebar. Vegas come up on this show quite a lot throughout the year, so I'm glad we got into that. All right, well, Matt, we thank you for the time. Thank you for the interview. It was very enlightening,
very informative. Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, keep in touch with us. If you get some other projects that you got going, you want to get some air,
please,
you know, airplay, we're happy to put you out there. And
yeah, I'd love to. I appreciate the time. And obviously, if listeners have any Copo questions or come across Copo cars, you know, have them reach out. I'd love to talk more about them and certainly see pictures and keep learning. You know, to me, that's what I can keep doing. You know, the story's not over just because the book's done. You know, there's more stuff to find out.
Do you have contact info you'd like to put out? If so, now is the time.
Sure. Yeah. You know, listeners can find me on Facebook at Matt Avery Media, as well as on Instagram at The Matt Avery. And also the email to reach me at is Matt Avery Media at gmail.com. So
excellent. And of course, visit copothebook.com and get a copy.
Great.
And,
nice looking website. Yeah.
Yeah, great pictures and all. Matt, thank you very much. We will be, we hope to be in touch again in the future about some other projects.
Don't be a stranger.
Yeah, and thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Okay, Matt.
I'll see you down the road.
Right.
Yeah.
Take care.
Again, that was Matt Avery, who wrote the Copo Chevy book, which is great because it's one of our favorites. And
yeah, you know, let's face it, you know, everybody always, oh, it's a Copo, cool,
right?
You know, it's not something you find on every street corner, you know.
And I'll tell you else who, I mean, we all liked it, our buddies liked them, but even our mamakins love those cars, right, Joe? So,
oh, well, mamakin, yeah, she's cool.
Let's see what she's got to say about it. We'll take our last break and we'll be back with more Motor Mouth Radio, motormouthradio.com, 90.3 WHPC.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 6 on Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities. An occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kay, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 6 on Revelations. Right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC. Please stay tuned for Motor Mouth Radio on Sundays at 12 noon, every Sunday, exclusively on WHPC. Join the Motor Mouths, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Features, information, guest interviews, tech tips, and all your call-in questions on all topics relating to automobiles. And these guys know their stuff. In case you haven't heard this show, not only is it very informative, it is hilarious at times. A lot of call-ins and a lot of crazy people calling in with problems with their cars. And, okay, Joe and Ray offering their expert opinion on these things and doing it in a somewhat comical fashion.
This portion of programming on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by the Center for Workforce Development and Lifelong Learning at Nassau Community College, which is offering an Introduction to Radio Broadcasting course for high school students interested in a media career. You can have the opportunity to learn hands-on in WHPC's studios, learning all about what the exciting world of radio has to offer. Students should have basic computer knowledge. More information can be found by calling 516-572-7472 or visit nc.edu/continuing education.
All Oh, that's us sleeping late and smoking something here on Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Joe D.
Yeah.
He's over here banging away at something on the side console. I see him go jumping up and down, bringing back some flashback memories.
Yeah. No, I got to go get the inhaler now.
Yeah. Mamakin did not authorize that one.
Hell but, no.
That was if you missed our last interview with Matt Avery, you'll want to check our website, motormouthradio.com, during the week for the replay of the show.
It was good.
And you can get that. Let's go back to the phone. We're going to go to the phone and say, hi, you're on with the Motormouths.
Hey, how you doing? It's Michael.
Hey, Mike. What's happening, Mikey? What's happening?
Well, a couple things about that Copo guy. He's pretty informative. But, you know, as I recall, back in 1969, it was Dickie Harrell that requested they put the 427 4 1/4 horse into the Camaro. And right. He was the first guy to stuff a ZL1 into a Camaro.
Okay.
Now, also, going back to the 70 Chevelles, every 70 Chevelle SS454 you see is an LS6, but I've seen maybe four or five that were factory LS7s, open chambered motors.
Okay.
And that probably could have been a Copo car, because you never see, I mean, even at auctions you never see an LS6, you know, an LS7 Chevelle. They were around. Yes, but there was two of them.
Yeah, that's where you would have to have the paperwork, the documentation,
exactly,
to prove that.
The build,
yeah,
sheet, whatever.
I remember, in fact, that two of them, and I think two of them, they were sold. One came through Spielman Chevrolet in Greenpoint, and the other one came through Myers Chevrolet in Maspeth.
Yep.
Myers, yeah.
Good old Myers.
The one guy, Joey Paletti, had the one car, was a dark green one, I remember. That car, you know, and that car, they stuffed the Engel cam in it and did some headwork. It had his 88s, ladder bars, and that car was running 1160s at the Hamptons, where you don't even hook up.
That's some setup. Yep.
Yeah.
And that was the scene of a big grudge race between him and this other guy from Mass, but had a Hemi Cuda, which eventually the Chevelle laid up the Hemi Cuda naturally.
Okay. Yeah, naturally, there you go. Well, we can see our biases here on Motormouth Radio. That's okay. We share them freely.
Yeah, good.
You know, and one other thing I'd like to add: everybody makes such a big deal over Yenko, Dickie Harrell. But everybody knows the fastest and baddest aftermarket day two cars all came out of Baldwin Motion.
Well, yeah, of course, our good old friends Joel and
Dennis Ferrara,
yeah.
With their test driver, Dennis Ferrara.
Right, yep. You are right. Yeah, absolutely. You got that right. Yeah.
And, you know, listen, you know, while those guys were running in the low 12s, high 11s, even 1968, they were guaranteed off Motion's, out of Motion's driveway to run 1160s.
That's right. Right,
and the last ones that were animal in the 1970s. You remember the Beamer poster? We were unbelievable. Then we were on real. Then we were on effing real. In 1970, the cars were guaranteed to run 1120s.
Yeah. That was a big claim. We actually talked to Joel Rosen about that years ago, and we had him on the show. And he said, "Yeah, we knew that." But you know, they did have a caveat. It had to be, I think the driver had to be
Dennis Ferrara.
Well, their driver, yeah. But I'm saying, like, if your car, you couldn't. They had some way around it. Like, if just some schmo in a, you know, with a pair of construction boots gets out there and couldn't hook the car, couldn't do it. They had a little caveat to that, but it was they did prove the car would do that with the right driver, and that was the thing. So
if you want to hear something interesting, read something interesting one day. Read all about the Commotion Corvette.
Oh, Commotion, absolutely, yeah, yeah. That's
you want to, you know, that they found that car. It was still in the garage with it. Still had the glass wax on the window from the last time it was run before he went away and got killed.
The
car was still in the garage. The story of Chaz. Mm-hmm. I have a guy here in the boatyard that was a close friend with his.
Oh, wow.
You know, mm-hmm. He grew up in Astoria also.
Right,
and
right.
That car, a Corvette, big-time Corvette collector, finally got his hands on it. And they restored the car. And, you know, the last date, they had fulfilled the dream by setting the A-modified sport record with the car, with Joe Rosen driving the car.
Okay.
You know, which is surprising. I didn't know he drove at all. I don't remember him. As I remember, his other guys from Motion, you know, driving the car, including Skip Norberg and everybody else. But
right.
That really shocked me. But hey,
yeah.
Who knew?
Hey, you know, a lot of stuff.
That was an original 4 1/4 horse car, and they had stuffed the L88 into it. And they used that. There was a parade in Patchogue over the summer where that car was actually used you could say it was the Grand Marshal of the parade.
Right. That car has been around. They've had it down at Belmore. They Billy G had it up at the Malba show.
Yes,
so it's been around.
Right. I remember that car racing at New York National Speedway and the Godfather Corvette.
Okay.
You remember that one?
The Godfather Corvette. I don't remember that one.
It was a 67 427 Corvette. You remember the Godfather with the strings on the puppet?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Remember the car. You got to go back. That's back to the days of Eastern Automotive and Meinsticker 3 and all of them other cars, you know?
Right, right.
Anyway, good talking with you boys.
Yeah,
enjoy.
Absolutely.
All right, Mikey, good to talk to you. Thanks again. Hi.
Thanks for the call. So
I knew if anybody would have information, it'd be Mike, because he's so dyed in the wool with this stuff, you know. But
yeah, yeah,
good
you,
stuff.
You, you know, you some of us got to live it, you know what I mean? Which isn't necessary. It wasn't me. I mean, I'm always a big fan of saying if you could remember the 70s, you really weren't there.
Well, you know, something that you may want to remember is Sunday afternoons at 3, listen to Piano Man. Someone's calling the old number. And where else but on Long Island would you find a radio show devoted to the music of Long Island's old Billy Joel? Well, right here, right? Host Chris Muldoon digs deep into Billy's catalog to include live performances, interviews, and demos and covers. If you love the Piano Man, you'll love Piano Man. And
yeah, definitely.
You'll also love next week's show, because we're going to have, we got to tie into Mark Warman from Graveyard Parts.
Oh, that parts guy.
Tony D'Agostino from Tony's Parts will be calling us next week. He'll be our guest. Caller, you're on the wrong line. You got to call 516-572-0606, which by the time you do that, we may be out of time. But, yeah, we're still working.
So start dialing.
We were wondering, Kim, if when we have multiple phone lines, if we'll be able to pop them up and down separately.
We can put two. We'll be able to put, from what I understand, we'll be able to put two callers on the phone.
Okay, but we'll be able to pop them.
So I believe you can. We'll be able to control. They're not going to be on the same pot, I think.
Right, because some people have good phones, bad phones.
Right, I'm assuming that we're going to have it on two different
pots. Good phones.
We'll be inventing it as we go, folks. So stick with us, and we'll. What was that, Joe?
Nothing. I was Led Zeppelin.
Oh, okay. I took the headset off.
Flashback.
Yeah, so we'll have Tony, and also coming up the week after that, Mr. Dan Short from Phantom Works.
Yes.
You know, that show was one of my favorites, and now the show is coming to an end. The final episode is this week.
It completed its run there, yeah.
And we're going to talk about that and some of the stuff that goes on with other shows of its
ilk. That's some show.
Dan's just a great guy. He's a nice guy. I spoke with him this week. And Tony, too. Just two great guys.
Yeah.
Again, like, we try to find people on this show that kind of mirror
regular guys,
what we do and who we are. And so far, we've been very fortunate to do that.
Yeah.
You know, we get lucky.
We definitely hit the good one there.
Yeah, so that's going to be, we'll be busy coming into February, and then
so stay tuned.
And I was talking to our web slash social media guy the other day, and I said, you know, I almost was wondering if I'm shooting myself in the foot. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, now I'm stacking these good guests. We got Matt, now then we're gonna have Tony, then we're gonna have Dan. I'm like, maybe I should like spread them out a little, like, you know, save some pudding or ice cream for later, not just have it all at once. And he says, no, you'll find more. I'm like, thanks for the confidence, but, you know, sometimes it's tough.
I mean, these guys don't go on trees. They're kind of unique there.
That's
you know?
Right. But, and then, you know, how many hours in a week do you have?
On the other hand, you know, because they do tend to be busy. They have their own endeavors and occupations there and whatnot.
The hotline's ringing, so we'll go back and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, how you doing, Ray? This is Tom Walsh from the Oldsmobile Club.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
All right, man, what's going on?
Hey, listen, I had to call in listening to this guy talking about the Copos. You know, I have my Oldsmobile collection, but my baby is a 69 Big Block Camaro that, as far as I know, is a Copo car.
Ooh.
I have to bring it around one day and show you guys. But
Hell yeah.
That's my baby I got for 40 years. I'm the second owner, as far as I know. I've never been able to get documentation on it, so I want to go on this guy's website and maybe even reach out to him, see what I can do.
The Snap-on guy we use actually has one as well that he built. You know, Tom, if there's anybody in the Olds community that's kind of like, you know, we talked about other cars that had the Skunk Works. If you ever hear about other, you know, through the Olds guys, of somebody who's done that with Oldsmobiles, we'd love to have them on the show as well.
Yeah, we
You know what?
Any kind of call like that.
I'll have to ask around.
Yeah, we speak.
I'll have to ask around and see what's...
All GMs. That's that's right up our wheelhouse. We love that stuff. Yeah, but we'd love to see a car one of these days. When the spring hits, maybe you drag it out and we'll get some eyes on it. That'd be cool.
I'd like to bring it up to the show one day, or maybe catch you at Belmore, or, you know, Friday night or something like that.
Yeah,
exactly. Cool.
So it's been a crazy, busy winter. I hope in springtime comes around, we'll have a lot more time for the hobby. Maybe me and Bob will come by and see you guys again.
That would be great.
We would love that. Absolutely. You're definitely on track for that.
All right. I know you don't have much time left. I just wanted to say hi. Wish you well.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, man.
And we'll be in touch.
Appreciate the call.
All right.
Thanks,
so long,
Tom.
Man.
All right. So long. That's excellent. Yes. You see, even old guys love Camaro. So, well, good.
It's a Camaro, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know. So
now, ain't too biased.
Now only if we had them.
Yeah.
You know? Well, we're trying, but what are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. So. You never can tell, you know. Ed McMahon or Yolanda Vega comes right. Knocking on your door. Yeah,
so now we're going to get the heck out of here. We're going to go see if we can find this stupid cap on this car, on this cruise.
Yeah, we're going to see if we can pull this down. Yeah, for sure.
And then we'll be back next week with more Motor Mouth Radio.
And don't forget Thunder Road.
Thunder Road, of course. Kim is coming in now. People know that because they like her better than they like us. We'll be back next week.
Down WHPC.
See ya.